The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Glory America Wednesday, and it's July, and I'm not there. I'm in vacation mode. Colonel Kurt Schlichter is in all week, and I appreciate it much. Kurt, take it away.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. This is Kurt Schlichter. I am here in the control booth of the Relief Factor studio in beautiful Southern California. It is Oh Dark 30, not Zero Dark 30, okay? Great title for a movie, but not what we said in the Army. I am, in fact, a retired United States Army colonel. I'm also a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer. I am the senior columnist at townhall.com, where I write every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and I have a column out today if you are a Town Hall VIP. And if you are a Town Hall VIP, and you should be a Town Hall VIP, you are also able to get my podcast, which is Not Safe for Work, and my Friday 10 to 15 minute video rant, The Stream of Kurtishness, which well, sometimes I work a little blue. I'm also the author of the Kelly Turnbull series of conservative action novels. The new one is The Split. It's number 6 in the series that began with People's Republic. You're going to want to go get all those books, because as my friend Andrew Breitbart, who sucked me back into conservative writing in the late aughts, once said, politics is downstream from culture. So go upstream. Be like a salmon. Swim against the flow. Get The Split. Support conservative authors. Or shut up about all the woke garbage you see on Netflix. By the way, do you see what the guy who owns Netflix is doing? He has intervened in the California recall race, folks. As you know, Governor Hairstyle is running to save his useless hide, because Californians are tired. They're tired of hobos. They're tired of crime. They are tired of mask mandates. Will we be talking about the mask mandates? Oh, yes, we're going to talk about the mask mandates. But did you know, according to the multi-zillionaire who owns Netflix and is paying for the ads, the recall effort is the result of conservative media. It's you people, you unsatisfied, uppity peasants. Oh, the peasants are revolting. They stink on ice, says Mel Brooks. By the way, Mel Brooks served in the Army as an engineer in World War II. He's in the Battle of the Bulge. There's a little trivia for you. Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. I was emotionally shattered yesterday as the moist, lachrymose members of Congress let the tears fall. You know, it's important to cry when you're slightly upset. And I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional here. There was a minor fracas, and some people were mean to me. Oh, God, shut up! Have some freaking dignity. Adam Kinzinger, you know, he's sitting there. He's tearing up because this is a word. It's a democracy. He's sitting there tearing up, and I'm looking at this guy who's a KC-130 pilot. And I'm looking at him, I'm going, all I can think of as he's like blubbering, right, is thank God he's not Army. I'm like texting my Air Force buddies. I'm like, he's all yours, baby. Hit send. Oh, and the cops. We're going to talk about that more as we go on. But I don't think the kangaroo court, the circus, the festival of foolishness that is the January 6th commission is the major story. The major story is, of course, the CDC's 180 about masks. And okay. First, it's you shouldn't wear a mask. Then it's you gotta wear a mask. Then it's you gotta wear two masks. Then it's now you don't have to wear a mask. And yesterday it became you gotta wear a mask again, even if you're vaccinated. Okay, if I convened a council of renowned dummies to think of a way to convince people not to take the vaccine, I don't think they could come up with a better plan than what these morons are doing in Washington. Well, we have to defer to what the CDC says. No, you don't! The CDC is an advisor. Joe Biden is allegedly the commander-in-chief. Now, when I was commanding a cavalry squadron, when I was acting commander at a brigade, I had a large staff. Okay? I had personnel folks, intelligence folks, operations folks, logistics folks, signal folks. I think I had a veterinarian. I had a bunch of people with expertise. I even had lawyers. Did they make decisions? No. The commander made decisions. There's one person in the executive branch who's elected. Well, actually, there's two. The president and vice president. They are the ones elected. They should be making the decisions. You don't subcontract out decision making. You subcontract out staff work and implementation, but not decision making. The CDC's proper role is an advisor. And properly constituted, a competent CDC, which we manifestly do not have, adds its input. You know, we've done a lot of studies, and we see that masking will, according to these studies, which we've reviewed carefully, will cut transmission of the virus by 42%. Okay, that's important information, says Joe Biden, because you know he's on top of stuff. You know, his shawl's over there on the rocker, the bowl of gruel is getting cold. Murder, She Wrote's on the DVR. He's in action. He's in decision-making mode. Then he goes, okay, economists, guys, what's the effect on the economy of a mask mandate? Hey, education guy, I want to know, what's the effect on kids? He gathers information from everybody. And then he makes a decision because he sees all the implications, and he is the one who's accountable. Instead, it's like, well, the CDC says. The CDC has a small sliver of the pie. That's not how you make decisions. Okay, and that's leaving aside that it's manifestly a bad decision. You want people to take the vaccine. I had the disease. Okay, I consulted with conservative doctors. I applied the facts of my life and my situation, including the people around me and their health. And my conservative doctors working with me decided that, yes, it makes sense for me to take the vaccine. I didn't just listen to the doctors. I listened to a number of people because I am my own commander in chief, as you are your own commander in chief. I didn't outsource decision making. I took their advice. And I came to the decision to take the vaccine. And I took it. I felt slightly tired. And I've had no other effects. I have a prehensile tail, as I've mentioned before. The good part is now I can hold three beers and or alternately two beers and hang from a rafter. But I've been quite happy with how it's gone. And I have not got COVID again that I know of. So I made that decision based on my factors. You should make it on your factors. You know your factors. You are your own commander in chief. You should seek advice from people you trust. Look at all the factors and then decide whether you're getting it or not. I encourage people to do it if it's the right choice for them. And I think that, and if you came to me and said, Kurt, what is your advice? Well, I can tell you my story. Worked out great for me. I would love to see you immune from it. The disease is a pain. It was annoying. For me, it was like a slight cold. Now, Arena, it was kind of a major flu. And what made it even better was I gave it to her because I got it working for Rick Grenell, who did not get it in Nevada for the president. So that was a little present I brought home from Las Vegas. That was smart because my wife's Cuban. And usually I try not to make any sudden moves around a woman who once told me I don't have enough guns. Guys, by any reasonable measure, I've got enough guns. But guns aren't one of those things that you measure reasonably. Not if you're a man. And if you're a man, you don't cry in front of other people. Holy cow, do I have to really say that? So, what do we got? We got idiots running our government. We got sissies whining on Capitol Hill and thinking that they did great. They were like walking out, going, this really worked out well. Yes, it did. When I cried, lots of normal Americans thought it was great. And we also have this Simone Biles woman. And I know nothing about it, so I'm going to do something revolutionary, folks. I am not going to have an opinion about her. I don't know anything about sports ball, so I'm going to shut the heck up about her, but not about other stuff. This is a Hugh Hewitt radio program. We got a great show today. I want you to stick around.
Morning Glory America, Wednesday, and it's July, and I'm not there. I'm in vacation mode. Colonel Kurt Schlichter is in all week, and I appreciate it much. Kurt, take it away.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. I am Kurt Schlichter. I'm back here in the Relief Factor studio in beautiful Southern California at O Dark 30. Who the heck am I? Senior columnist at townhall.com. I am a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer. I'm a retired United States Army colonel. I am an author. And my newest novel, The Split, the sixth in the Kelly Turnbull series, has just dropped. And it was burning up the charts. So you should go out and get The Split. It's got guns. It's got crocodiles. It's got liberal bashing. It's got more guns. It's got everything you could ever want in a conservative action novel. The Split by Kurt Schlichter. Go get it. I have to talk about masks. And I have to... Let's hear them out about their latest 180. You know, the biggest danger, I believe, is not the Delta variant. The biggest health threat in America is the mass whiplash we're suffering from the CDC spinning around in its advice. Cut 10.
Information on the Delta variant from several states and other countries indicates that in rare occasions, some vaccinated people infected with the Delta variant after vaccination may be contagious and spread the virus to others.
Some people. How many? Some. What percentage?
What's the number? Because science, right?
Science.
Where's my science? I want
data?
Some science.
Some people may transmit
now,
this.
You're saying,
we don't know for sure.
Hold on. You're saying a vaccine that's 99.7% effective, 3 people in 1,000 can spread the virus?
That's
yes,
some,
that's what you're saying.
That some people,
that
and
is
they
some,
may transmit
I,
it.
I like how it's a surprise, too. They're like, it was 99.7% effective, yet we found out that 0.3% can spread the virus. We're shocked. Look, I'm no Stephen Hawking, but I can do a little math. And when you give 160 million people the vaccine, and it's got 99.7% effectiveness, you're going to have several thousand people it didn't work on, right? That's shouldn't be a surprise.
It's called math.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're acting like, we've just discovered. Well, didn't you know that going in? And now you're like, oh my gosh, the people we should have always expected might actually still catch it after taking the vaccine. They're actually catching it. What are we going to do? Well, shouldn't that have gone into your calculus? Well, let's see. Here's what they want to do. Number 9, please.
As CDC has recommended for months, unvaccinated individuals should get vaccinated and continue masking.
Why?
Until they are fully vaccinated. In areas with substantial and high transmission, CDC recommends fully vaccinated people wear masks in public indoor settings to help prevent the spread of the Delta variant and protect others.
Stop. She just said in the last cut, some people may transmit it. That doesn't mean they know for sure. They don't have data that proves that it does. It's just that people may transmit the disease.
So science is basically a guess?
We're playing a hunch.
A hunch? But I was informed that science is scientific. Why do you hate science so much, Dwayne? Science is not a liberal mad lib that you fill in the blanks with whatever's going to make Rachel Maddow squee. Okay? As I pointed out before, if you convened a council of renowned idiots to come up with a worse way of convincing people to take the vaccine,
it's sabotage.
Yeah. This has to be intentional. They have to be sitting around going, what is the worst thing we can do? I don't think they could come up with a better one if they planned to screw this up. I just find the whole thing remarkable.
If you take the actual data from the CDC, and I know there's a lot of people out there in this audience that say, I wouldn't trust anything out of the CDC. I understand that.
Because we believe, some people believe, and the CDC has done nothing to earn our trust, that the CDC would exaggerate.
Right.
But let's take their exaggerated numbers. And they're still minuscule compared to what's happened.
If you look at the data from the CDC, the actual numbers of breakthrough cases that have resulted in hospitalizations.
And this is numbers that a lot of people think would be inflated, and I absolutely do not trust the CDC either. But let's assume that their inflated numbers are accurate. It's still not that many.
No, it's about 0.35%.
Okay, guys, you've got to learn to manage risk. Okay, one of the things, look, is I'm a trial lawyer, okay? Often I defend cases, sometimes I bring them. Plaintiff's lawyers like to play on people's inability to manage risk. What they'll say is, well, you knew that if you drove that car, you had a chance of having an accident. Well, yeah. See? Putting people in danger by driving! Well, I've driven for 40 years. I've never been in a major accident. But it is possible. Okay? Because, like, when I'm driving home today after this, I've had so much coffee, I'm going to be a little distracted about getting to the bathroom. I need to focus. So there's always a risk. This is a risk I take for you, the Hugh Hewitt radio audience.
There are people that will look at the vaccine and say, well, there's more breakthrough cases. See, it doesn't work as much. You know, they're going to try and trash the vaccine by padding the numbers. And I'm thinking, okay, well, if you've got that kind of data, wouldn't the CDC latch onto those numbers? Because it would, if the vaccine weren't that effective, it would make their argument as to why we need to mask more. The data that they're putting out does not lead to a logical scientific conclusion that masking is necessary.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
I'm still waiting for the study that tells me that masks have any kind of effect other than humiliating us and turning us from citizens into serfs. And I won't mask. I'm the guy walking around who won't have a mask. And there's other people, and they've got, like, they're in their Prius with the coexist bumper sticker, and they've got, like, two masks on.
How's that working in L.A. County?
Oh, I just do whatever I want. Are you going to come up and tell me, sir, you've got to put a mask on? I got to take a plane. Now, I'll have to do it on a plane. But I have, like, the most passive-aggressive mask. The thing's down around my chin. You know, I'm sitting there. I'm nursing a cocktail the entire flight.
So you're going the full John Kerry in an airport.
Well, I'm not going to be a looming doofus. Although I do approve of Heinz ketchup. It's my favorite kind of ketchup.
I understand that, but he doesn't do a mask very well in airports.
None of them do. I want to be a Democrat legislator running away from Texas. I want no mask, and I want the Miller.
Yes.
Though Miller's a little salty for my taste. I like Mexican beers. Dos Equis. It's my favorite beer. You lived in Germany for years. What are you saying? I'm saying I like Dos Equis. I like the fresh, crisp taste.
Well, that's
right. I know, Dwayne's going, would you please keep on the mask topic?
We got through.
Keep on the mask topic.
We're in an 11-minute segment, and we still haven't played one cut yet.
Oh, good. No,
not
we played
one.
Two. We played Wachinski or whatever their name is. Do we have 2 minutes to play Fauci taking every position possible? No Kamala jokes.
Let's do it right now. Cut eight.
People should not be walking around with masks. Let me just state for the record that masks are not theater. Wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better. And
masks
are protective. But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
There has not been any indication that putting a mask on and wearing a mask for a considerable period of time has any deleterious effects.
There are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course.
Schmutz? Is that a technical
term? To wear a mask indoors if, in fact, you've been vaccinated. Good that you're vaccinated, but in a situation where you have people indoors, particularly crowded, you should wear a mask.
So even if you are vaccinated, you should wear a mask.
That if, in fact, you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, you are protected, and you do not need to wear a mask outdoors or indoors.
I can't take it anymore. Shut this horrible gnome up.
He has to be right.
Technically,
somewhere in
as
there,
I pointed out earlier,
one time,
statistically,
he has to be right.
Because he's taken every possible position.
Yes.
Sometime he has to be right. See, he should stop there. It should be like musical scientists.
He is Dr. Magic 8 Ball. If you keep shaking him, you will eventually get
signs
the answer point you're looking
to
for.
Yes. Signs point to me slapping someone here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. Stick around. We got a lot more to come.
Portions of the Hugh Hewitt Show brought to you by Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For more info, call 888-888-1172.
We can see through their thin disguise. This is Kurt Schlichter sitting in for the great Hugh Hewitt, the Relief Factor Studio, beautiful Southern California. Did I mention you should go buy my new bestseller, The Split? An action-packed conservative thriller with guns and crocodiles and liberal bashing and all sorts of stuff. Lies! No, not about my book, about masks. They want you to wrap a thong around your pie hole, and I say no. They've been lying to us, folks. Look at this. Cut number 18, Kamala Harris. Just take it away, Kamala.
People need to get vaccinated. That's the only way we're going to cut this thing off. Nobody likes wearing a mask. Get vaccinated.
She's literally wearing a mask in that video.
She is vaccinated. She is sitting behind a desk. She is not within 10 feet of another human being.
And she's got a mask on.
Even if she did not have a mask on, she couldn't give a COVID molecule to anybody else if she tried. Where she's sitting,
there's a lot of jokes
desk.
There, and I'm not going to type any of them.
I understand that she couldn't.
Okay, but she doesn't try.
She could. Go ahead.
The montage. The
yes.
montage of them not trusting the vaccine. That's cut seven. Let's hear what she
right.
said. Let's hear her talk out of the other side of her mask.
Let's just say there's a vaccine that is approved and even distributed before the election. Would you get it?
Well, I think that's going to be an issue for all of us.
If and when the vaccine comes, and it's not likely to go through all the tests that needs to be and the trials that are needed to be done.
When we finally do, God willing, get a vaccine, who's going to take the shot? Who's going to take the shot? You can be the first one to say, put me, sign me up. They now say it's okay.
And the question of whether it's real when it's there, that requires enormous transparency. You got to make all of it available to other experts across the nation so they can look and see. So there's a consensus this is a safe vaccine.
If the president announced tomorrow we have a vaccine, would you take it? Only if it was completely transparent that other experts in the country could look at it. Only if we knew all of what went into it.
If Donald Trump can't give answers and his administration can't give answers to these three questions, the American people should not have confidence.
But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
Record scratch! Cut number three.
That's under consideration right now, but if you're not vaccinated, you're not nearly as smart as I thought you were.
So is President Asterisk, who got up from watching Murder, She Wrote, got out of his rocker, put his shawl and his bowl of gruel aside, and told you, you're not smart if you don't take the vaccine. That's the new position du jour. There'll be another one tomorrow. Is he effectively saying that Donald Trump was right and Donald Trump was a miracle worker for getting this vaccine done and that it is safe and effective? Is that what he's saying? Because it appears he's saying it today, although yesterday he told us we have to do masks, and I'm very confused.
Well, look, these are people that got to where they are by politicizing the vaccine. And now they are shocked that the vaccine is being politicized. And how dare they? We need to have trust in government again. Why?
What? Didn't you just spend most of last year talking about how Donald Trump's going to get
we
you?
Now, look, we don't trust the government. We don't trust this guy. We don't trust this administration.
I don't trust the government. I don't trust the government at all. Look, there are people who don't want to take the vaccine because they don't trust the government, because the government has lied to them. And that is an indisputable fact. Since it's taken every possible position, by definition, some of the time it's been lying. So when people go, those unreasonable anti-vaxxers, well, A, they're not necessarily anti-vaxxers. They just don't trust you about this because you squandered their trust by lying to them. Okay?
You can only chicken little people so long.
Well, exactly. Well, it's all Republican voters. No, it's not.
It really
isn't. The African-American community is very vaccine hesitant. And frankly, if I'm from the government and I'd like to inject you with something, if you're a black American, that's not crazy to go, not so sure about that. If you know anything about the Tuskegee experiment, which was...
Went on for years.
40 years. Unbelievable. It's staggering what happened. If you're wondering where the trust went, that's one more drop in the bucket of distrust that they filled. I'm Kurt Schlichter. This is Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. We'll be back with the indispensable Jim Garrity in just a moment. The Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. You know it's guest host Kurt Schlichter because that's the Ramones. And you know I'm on my fourth cup of coffee because I need to be sedated. Are these musical cues a subtle hint that I need to chill the heck out? I'm still trying to get my mind around this mask stuff. So I need a voice of calm, a voice of sanity, a voice of reason. So naturally, I reached out for my pal, Jim Garrity of National Review and The Morning Jolt. Jim, bring me down to earth.
Kurt, I know you're looking for some soft, melodious tones.
we got to give the backstory.
Yeah, but you're not going to get them today because
what?
I'm pretty irate and fired up about this. I'm in the process of writing The Morning Jolt as we speak.
So we got mad, Jim, today.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. I'm vaccinated. I think everybody else out there should get vaccinated. But if you've chosen not to, I went and I looked it up, you know, because the year kind of flies by. People easily forget. Everyone has been eligible since April 19th. Teenagers have been eligible since May 10th. You know, if you've chosen not to get, you know, it's in every drugstore. It's free. Ohio was running the lottery. If you've chosen to not get vaccinated by now, that's your choice. And you know, it's a free country. I do not like the idea.
Sort of.
I think if you're in, fair point. I do not like this idea. And you're seeing more and more people kind of openly discuss this. Like, well, you know, the vaccine should be mandated. It should not just be required.
Oh, it ain't mandating nothing.
Yeah. If you can't see the problems of the government injecting something in you that you don't want, you know, like then the lay. Like I'm not even that much of a libertarian, but that part I can see. Okay, that's the sort.
That's the line in the sand when they're sticking a needle in you. Yeah, Jim Garrity, I absolutely agree. Now I have taken the vaccine too. My body surges with powerful antibodies because I actually had the disease. Then I consulted with conservative doctors. I looked at all the factors involved in my life, including the people around me and their conditions, and I chose to get the vaccine. It made me slightly tired. I do have a prehensile tail. We've discussed that before. It's very useful. I can now have handle three beers at a time, or hang from a rafter and have two beers. But look, I have no desire to go tell other people what they need to do. There are a number of factors at issue.
If you're vaccinated, the Delta variant, at most, you could get. First of all, yes, the vaccine does not prevent infections; it prevents serious illness, and that's what we're really afraid of. We didn't shut down society every winter because of the flu, right? Yeah, we shut down society in COVID-19 because it was something new. Like, oh my God, particularly if you're older, particularly if you're immunocompromised, this thing could kill you. If you're young and healthy, you had a really good chance of pulling through just fine, and you may not even have...
Well, I mean, it's better than a really good chance. It's statistically infinitesimal. Have you noticed that, Jim Garrity, that America has a huge problem managing risk?
Mm. No, this entire pandemic has been a 18-month, going on two-year illustration of this. And what's most frustrating about the CDC ruling yesterday is that by asking people who are fully vaccinated to mask up.
Well, I wish they were just asking.
Yeah, well, okay.
And I have an answer for them.
Giving the justification for local governments and state governments and employers and all that other stuff to, you know, require people to wear masks to protect the unvaccinated. First of all, they're punishing the responsible in order to take care of the irresponsible.
Yeah, that's my thing. Now, let me get this straight. You chose not to get vaccinated, so I got to throw a thong around my pie hole. Is that how this works? Because that doesn't work for me.
And in the end, you can see, we've seen this dynamic at work throughout the whole series of the pandemic. There is a chunk of the Americans who are effectively neurotic. They look for things to worry about. They find things to worry about.
Yes, and vote for Joe Biden.
I'm not surprised that you don't see a lot of virologists who like to skydive on the weekends. I'm not surprised that people who are epidemiologists don't like to rock climb without ropes. Got it. Fine. Okay. These are not people who embrace a risk because they spend their time looking under microscopes at like things that can kill them. Got it. Okay. Fine. Other people are going to have different levels of risk tolerance. And part of the idea of this country is, you know what? As long as you're not harming somebody else, as long as what you're doing isn't inflicting physical or some other harm on other people, you go and live your life. And if you want to do stuff that's risky, fine. Know those risks and accept those risks. And what they're doing now is basically, first of all, like the idea, I cannot believe that we're at the same time we're trying to tell Americans, go out and get vaccinated. We're trying to tell teenagers, go out and get vaccinated. You know, this is, you're now eligible after 12 and older. And we're going to say, oh, by the way, every kid in school has got to be wearing a mask, whether or not they're vaccinated. What signal does that tell you? Like, this is the bizarre situation that the people who worry the most about COVID-19 and the anti-vaxxers in this situation are in the same message. Which is that the vaccines aren't really effective enough, and it doesn't work well enough, and that there are people from the beginning of this pandemic, or I should say, you know, from the moment March 2020, people who have basically had this sense of dread in their bones, you know, their entire lives, they felt pretty vindicated in March 2020. They felt good.
Yeah,
felt finally I've been proven right after all this time. They want to go back to that.
This is the Woodstock for a lot of people, Jim Garrity. This is the most exciting thing that they've ever been a part of. Okay, look, I deployed to Desert Storm. I ran a heavily armed car wash, but I was still there. And there's a feeling when you have some. It's got a little bit of danger. It's got a lot of novelty. You know it's something you're going to remember the rest of your life. You know it's some people are going to talk about. Most Americans never have that. For a lot of them, it's this. This is the time, and they want it at some level. They love the idea of lockdowns. They love the idea of masks because it fills their empty lives with some kind of meaning. And yeah. I'm sick of having to live, with the consequences of these freaks' personal psychodramas.
Well, again, we all went through it. We all lived through it. And if it gave you that sense of shared mission, that sense of fine, great, wonderful. But we're all back, most of us are vaccinated now. We can now go back to normal life. And if you love staying at home and not seeing your relatives and not seeing your family and loved ones and friends and all that kind of stuff and ordering takeout and streaming everything on Netflix, that's great. I got a life to lead over here.
Yeah. I'm
back to normal life because I was pretty happy with things before, you know, March 2020 kicked in.
Well, look I don't feel I should have to conform my existence to the convenience of a bunch of lonely shut-ins.
Yeah. And that is, it's been really fascinating to watch the people who freaked out as they opened up society very gradually this past year. Generally pretty safely. And, you know, I guess it was probably March, April. I was down in Hilton Head, crossed over to Savannah. Stores were full of people. Some people masked, some people not. And if there was going to be this massive breakout of cases, it's like, okay, that's when you'd see it. People were back to, you know, back to their normal habits again. And it didn't happen. There were no, you know, giant, you know, mass deaths and all that kind of stuff.
Well, look, so, it didn't help when, you know, the leftists decided to take to the streets for their mostly peaceful riots. And we were informed by all the smart people who we should trust unequivocally because science that it's actually OK and, in fact, important that they get out there and mix and mingle. You can't go to church, but you can go out in the street and burn stuff because of racism.
In my personal favorite example of that, Kurt, is the guy who dressed up, the lunatic lawyer down in Florida, dressed up as the Grim Reaper, because he wanted to warn people that going to the beach and being outside in sunshine and strong winds was a they were risking their lives of COVID-19. Now, with further, we now know going outside, I mean, that's like the safest place you could have been. and the coverage of this guy was so credulous and was so, like, this is clearly a guy who's way off his rocker. And if he dressed up like the San Diego Chicken and tried to tell people,
which would be more dignified.
Well, yeah. And if he had done that and he tried to say that eating rutabaga will kill you, and he went around a restaurant, like, he'd be like, wow, this guy needs to be in a rubber room and taken away in a straitjacket. But because he was doing that in the seat service,
he's an important visionary.
The risks, no.
Well, let's talk about the political fallout of this, because we have seen the revolt of the governors yesterday as Republican governors have said, we're not doing any of that. You know, led by Ron DeSantis, who seems to be dragging the kind of squish governors kicking and screaming behind him towards freedom. But no, the Republican governors are going, there's no science behind that, so we're not doing any of it. So we're getting a real clear breakdown. The blue states here, Governor Hairstyle's going to go all in for facial fascism. But, you know, if you go to a free state, and I'm going to Texas this weekend, I'm not going to wear a mask, from the second I get off the aircraft. What do you think politically this means? Do you think after this, whiplash of changing, we promise you won't have to wear a mask if you get vaccinated. I got vaccinated. Wear a mask anyway. How do you think that's going to affect the midterms?
The first lesson of the last 18 months is that the imposition of strict rules in a particular state greatly increases the chances that you will see one of the office holders violating those rules.
Yes.
Most famously, Newsom at the French Laundry, but there are plenty of examples of this. And my governor, Governor Blackface here in Virginia. I'm sorry.
Wait, was he the Blackface guy or the Klan guy?
On the pandemic, Northam hasn't been that bad. He's always been very consistent, saying people should always wear a hood. Mask. Hood, mask. Always be covering your face. Shoe polish, something like that. Something should be on your face. Yeah.
Always be cross-burning.
Yes, there you go.
Glengarry, Glenn Northam.
Kurt, he doesn't do that anymore because of the carbon emissions.
Exactly.
The more you impose these rules, the more likely it is you're going to see more examples of this.
See a wave election for Republicans next year, Jim Garrity?
It's building. It's building. Looking in that direction, Kurt.
I'm loving it. Thank you, Jim Garrity from National Review. Go read The Morning Jolt every morning and stick around with us. We got Roger Kimball coming up next. It's going to be great. We're back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I am guest host Kurt Schlichter. And that bumper music is Motorhead. And when you think of Motorhead, you immediately think of Roger Kimball, the editor of the New Criterion, at Roger Kimball on Twitter. Roger, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt program.
Good to be with you, Kurt.
Good to have you. I kind of want to take a 30.
I love that introduction.
You love that, right? I know you wanted to hear Ace of Spades, but I like the David Bowie cover. It's nice. Yeah, I think of you as the Lemmy Kilmeister of conservatism. In any case, Roger, let's take a 30,000-foot view of what's going on. You're a cultural commentator. I've read your stuff for decades, and you have a very incisive view of what the heck's going on. How is this pandemic and the panic that's ensued from it, how's that going to change our society? And, gosh, can we ever change back?
Well, that's a very good question. People have pointed out that pandemic is the word panic along with the word Dem, or Democrat. And
whoa!
I think there's something to that. This is a seasonal respiratory virus. It can be serious for a very tiny part of the population. One has to exercise certain precautions and so on. But there's no doubt, at least in my mind, that this has been used and abused by governments across the world to as a kind of exercise in social control. I imagine a few years ago, if someone told you that the CDC or Governor Cuomo or whoever or St. Anthony Fauci would be able to tell the population of the United States that they were not allowed to appear in public without wearing a kind of face diaper. Would you have believed it? No, that's some kind of bizarre Orwellian fantasy. But that's where we are now. And, the politicization of disease and the invocation of public health as a tool of social control should concern everyone, especially at a time when more traditional forms of social control. I'm thinking of what's going on in Washington. They've arrested something like 400 people who were hanging around the Capitol on January 6th. Now, it's true that there's maybe a few dozen who, sad sacks who would wear horns and pretend that they were part of a militia or something. But the idea that this represented any threat to democracy is, to my mind, preposterous. What is a threat to democracy is the marshaling of the police power of the state to do things like engage in a soft coup against the duly elected president of the United States, which is precisely what the FBI and the intelligence services, aided and abetted by the media, did to President Trump.
Well, what we're seeing here, Roger Kimball, is a complete change about what we're currently called conservatives. But I don't see us wanting to conserve much. I see us wanting to burn down institutions. The FBI has betrayed us. The military, at least its leadership, is an utter disaster. The CDC is a joke that's not funny. And I think what the left did was attempt to leverage our natural conservatism, our support for institutions and traditions, thinking that they could change rules for them, but the status quo would remain in place for us. We would be we wouldn't change. But I think we have.
Yes. Well, that's a very good point. I remember Friedrich Hayek in The Road to Serfdom. One of the main points of that book, he said, is to show how extensive government control leads to a psychological change in the populace, habituating them to what Hayek calls socialism, but we could fill that out, habituating them to a status of dependency. And I think that you are absolutely right to put your finger on these institutions that until very recently had the instinctive support and allegiance of the great swath of the American public, that is to say the conservative part, that part that you know, was pro-America, pro-patriot, you know, and all, pro-family, all of that stuff. But what has happened is that to an extent that is frightening to contemplate, and with a rapidity that is frightening to contemplate, these institutions have been hollowed out. And you're quite right. It still looks like the FBI. You can go there and look at the building. You've got all the G-men in there, and you know. And I'm sure that many of the rank and file are terrific people.
Are you?
But the leadership.
Are you really sure?
I'm not sure.
Who has resigned? Who has said, hell no, I won't be a part of this? I haven't seen that. I'm not sure there are any good apples left. But that's just me. Roger Kimball, editor, New Criterion, thank you very much for that 30,000-foot view. This is the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm Kurt Schlichter.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no-money-down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
America Wednesday, and it's July, and I'm not there. I'm in vacation mode. Colonel Kurt Schlichter is in all week, and I appreciate it much. Kurt, take it away.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. I am Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist at townhall.com, noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, retired United States Army colonel, author of the new best-selling novel, The Split, the sixth in the Kelly Turnbull series of conservative action novels. They've got guns. They've got liberal bashing. They got crocodiles. They got more guns. You're going to love it. You need to go out and get it. The Split. I know Hugh says you're supposed to say it seven times in a segment, and that sells books. But so I'm down too. But I'd like to sell my next guest book. And it's my friend Michael Walsh. And his book is extremely timely right now. Michael, how are you?
Good morning, Colonel. I am reporting for duty.
Well, tell us about your book, because, and let's talk about how it relates to what happened on Capitol Hill yesterday.
Oh, boy. Where did we start, Kurt? Let's start with...
with the femboys. That's where we're starting.
I was going to say, let's start with the men, but there weren't any up there yesterday.
Oh, my God. That was embarrassing.
It really was. It was one of the most humiliating things that this country has ever actually witnessed, and half of which celebrated it.
I don't think half. I think even a lot of liberals were like, dude, don't cry. What's wrong with you?
Well, you know, the whole idea of what it means to be a man, obviously, in my new book, Last Stands.
Why Men Fight When All Is Lost.
Correct. Man is the operative word here. And we just seem to be in pretty short supply these days, Kurt. And because the question is, what's worth fighting for? And that's something I explore in depth in my own best-selling book here, Last Stands. And yet we don't seem to have, we have lost the masculine virtues.
I don't think we have. I think, Michael Walsh, I think they have. I think they got up there and thought if they bit their lips. And keep in mind, Kinzinger is a Air Force lieutenant colonel, and he's up there sobbing over, I don't know, a minor fracas. You know, you and I had dinner the other night in beautiful Culver City at a barbecue place. Right in that area, I was on the streets for 3 weeks during the Los Angeles riots. I came home and had a beer like a man. These guys, they were traumatized. And of course, in Los Angeles, we had about 60 people murdered. On Capitol Hill, we had one unarmed veteran trespasser shot by a cop whose name we don't even know.
Right.
And well, they're broken men. PTSD. I'm trying to work through the trauma. Oh, jeez.
It's very sad. As you know, Kurt, in Last Stands, I end the book with my own father's experiences at the Chosen Reservoir.
Which is, folks, it is worth the price. I got to read it in advance copy, and I was, look, I know the battles, Kenai and Rourke's Drift. Yeah, I get that. That last chapter was incredible, Michael. I mean, it was moving. It was, wow.
Well, thank you for that. But when you grow up with that, and that man, I was already born when he went off to Korea, but he came back and probably four more children, my siblings. When you grow up with that ethos, even though he never, ever talked about it, we have vague notion that he was in some Marine Corps action as we were kids growing up in San Diego, California. But that ethos penetrates your upbringing, and what it means to be a man is something that men used to pass on to their sons, not to their daughters, to their sons. And you had a culture of masculinity that has been under assault now for how many years? 50, 60, something like that. And what you get from that, you saw on Capitol Hill yesterday, weeping, hugging, crying. Good Lord, what is this, a Mahjong circle? That was absolutely disgraceful.
Well, the nice thing is, you know, are these lachrymose, moist wimps, are they the ones who are going to come and take our guns and ship us off to camps? I don't think so.
That'd be pretty funny.
And I don't think they represent real America. I think on MSNBC, I think, Rachel Maddow probably, squeed with delight. But I think normal people, even ones kind of liberal, even ones who are like, yeah, you know, the Capitol Hill thing, I'm not a real big fan, probably saw that and said, dude, you're embarrassing yourself. Get some dignity.
Yeah. But you know who cheerleads this stuff? It's my own personal bête noire, the New York Times. I get their Twitter instant headline update on my phone all day. And I saw it come across yesterday, and it said something like, in excruciating detail. Excruciating means the agony Jesus felt on the cross. That's what the word derives from.
Yep.
Crociata, the cross. In excruciating detail, the survivors of the Capitol Hill riot.
Survivors!
The trauma.
That would be the survivors.
Yeah, the survivors. You know, everybody's a survivor of something now, because that gives you victim status, and that gives you dignity and moral
superiority. You know, when the 24th foot was holding off the multiple impies of Zulu warriors at Rourke's Drift.
Yeah.
I suppose Chard and Bromhead and Color Sergeant Bourne were sitting around hugging, sharing their feelings, crying, and inspiring their men through their own being in touch with their feelings. Is that how that worked out?
That's pretty much how they won. I mean, they just sat around and they held hands, and they...
And the Zulus respected their openness.
They totally respected that. They said, hey, these guys are tough. We ain't going to mess with them. And then went off.
You look back at history, when you've got two groups of, heroic, masculine men. You got the British colonial forces. You got the Zulu warriors, who were just... of all the indigenous population, indigenous warfare, these guys were like the top of the heap.
They were the Spartans.
Unbelievable. The Zulus were just, and it was just a real clash of titans. And then you look at these guys, traumatized, literally shaking because some granny took a selfie in the rotunda.
Right, right.
It's pathetic.
Well, you know, you're a military man. I grew up in a military culture, and for us, it's just alien. Nobody
alien.
We know would act like that ever. It would be embarrassing. You'd never show your face in public.
Well,
again.
Speaking of showing your face, we have been informed that we now must mask again, even though we were told if you vaccinate, you don't have to mask. Now we got to mask again. What is it with this obsession of these badges of serfdom?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I wrote a column in this week's Epoch Times, which is getting a lot of action online, basically saying, take off the slave muscles and refuse to give up
slave
your
muscle.
Freedom. This is not about health. It's about your freedom.
Exactly.
As an American. And that's what they want to – this sort of feminized culture we live in, which prizes safety over every conceivable thing and is pushed daily – by the Times, by NPR, which we pay for, by the way, and other media organs.
Thank you, establishment GOP.
Oh, yeah, well, they're always, of course, right. They're the first guys up to the front of the line with rifles in their hand, aren't they? Good Lord. No, we're in tough shape. We don't have a culture of masculinity. It's been beaten out of us. And I think the fact that your fellow citizens are walking around with slave muzzles on, joyfully, by the way, and look at you askance as if you're some kind of serial killer radiating, you know.
Oh, I had some hefty lady pull up, yell out the window, wear a mask. And all I could say is, hey, stand back. I don't want diabetes. By the way, you know my wife. I'm not going to say because I want to be FCC compliant what my wife told her, but it was not pleasant. I'm not as pessimistic as you. I think there is a culture of masculinity out there. I just don't think we see it because it doesn't get covered. And and I live in kind of bluish areas, so we see a lot of beaten down, feminized men enthralled to their Chardonnay swilling liberal wives who walk around with Kendi's books and lattes.
Basically, right. But let me just say this. As you know, I'm on an 8,000-mile trip in and around the United States in my car. Okay, I just decided to do this.
Like Selena Zito.
Well, Selena's a great reporter.
Isn't she? You are a real reporter, too, so you must be loving what's going on now with the media.
Well, I was once upon a time. But what I wanted to do was see the country, really, for, you know, this is probably the last time I'll ever pull a stunt like this. It's taken me a month and a half, and I'm only halfway through it. So what I see is a real country, and then the occupied areas on the coast that are insane. They are literally crazy. They're talking about trauma and crying and hugging it out. And
I think they actually enjoy this mask stuff. Michael Walsh, author of Last Dance, can you stay in our segment with me? Because I think we got probe.
I think we certainly can arrange that. Yes, sir.
Excellent. Michael Walsh will be joining me again. He is the author of Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. I highly recommend it. I have bought this book for people in my life, including my dad, who's a retired naval officer, and he has greatly enjoyed it. I want you to stick around. We got a lot more to talk about here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. See you in a couple minutes. We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. This is guest host Kurt Schlichter. That bumper music is literally the only classical music I know. And I had to play it for my friend Michael Walsh, who is, of course, among the many things you're an expert on, is classical music. You're also an expert on human nature. And I was wondering, why do you think people are so eager to submit to gross indignities like masks?
Well, let me just say before we get to that, you just reminded me of one of my favorite quotes about my own personal hero, Ulysses S. Grant, who was notoriously unmusical. And he once said, I only know two tunes. One is Yankee Doodle and the other one isn't. the Ride of the Valkyries from Act 3, the opening of Act 3 of Wagner's second opera in the Ring cycle, the Valkyrie, it's called, I thought of Grant. Why do people want to put on masks? I think they enjoy being slaves. I think slavery, which is a word that's become so corrupted and freighted now by racial elements. Slavery goes back to the Roman period, goes back to the Greeks. Everybody enslaved everybody. If you lost, you got enslaved. It's a normal human condition. And what was remarkable about Western European culture was that it got rid of slavery. This is the only culture that ever did. And yet there seems to be some aspect of the human creature that feels comfortable in conformity. And that's why I'm so opposed to the mask myself, because it's just a visible sign of your conformity. And I just have one other thing to say. As you know, it's not original thought with me, but the United States hasn't won a war since we changed the name of the War Department to the Defense Department. And I think that was a very telling change because, as you know, if you're on defense, you're losing. That's the point. You're losing, right? The bad guys are coming over the parapets. We no longer go on offense because it's rude to do that. We no longer want to win. We want to act proportionately. This is an insane delusion that is purely suicidal. And masks have exercised me. Because it just seems to me to be our fellow citizens saying, I am content to be a slave, and why won't you do it? And, you know, they're very aggressive about it when you're not wearing a mask, too. It's just a derangement that has got to be stopped if this culture is to continue. There is nothing to fear from COVID-19. it doesn't kill anybody, basically, except people who are very elderly. Listen, I'm over 70, so I should be worried. I'm not. It kills people with comorbidities. Most of the time you have it, you don't even know it. Yes, is it unpleasant? I'm sure it's unpleasant.
It
I think
is.
I had it, in fact. I think I had it right at the beginning. But it's not worth destroying a civilization over. Nothing is worth doing that. And I said last night in my column on the Epoch Times yesterday, do you want to live forever or do you want your country to live forever? That's your choice here. Stop this nonsense.
Well, Michael Walsh, author of Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. Let me here's an observation. I think that hard, tough men made Western civilization and America in particular.
Yes.
And they were too successful. These hard men made a country where you could afford to grow up and be soft. And I think that's what happened.
I think so, too. But remember, Kurt, this is just a cycle. The Spartans were as tough as they came. And eventually they lost and they were defeated. And the Romans learned how to defeat the Greek phalanxes, and the Athenians beat them to become supreme in the Greek territories. It just seems that you have hard men who create a country that their wives and children can grow up in safely, and they become weak. And what happens is they attract the attention of other hard men who want to conquer them. Conquest is the nature of the human animal, and that's the point of Last Stands, is this goes on forever. So we're in a cycle now where we're on the losing end of this particular cultural shift, and I don't know how we get it back, but I will say one more quick thing. In my drive across the country, I didn't see racism. I saw black people and white people interacting perfectly comfortably, polite, friendly. That's the world the New York Times says is out there.
Well, that's because you were visiting America. Michael Walsh, author of Last Stance, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. I highly recommend it, and I highly recommend you stick around on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. We got a lot more to come.
Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.